who were here on Wednesday for Bible study, you know that for my health, and probably not the wisest thing, I decided to take a challenge upon myself and give up sugar, more specifically like processed sugar, anything with like high fructose corn syrup and sugary snacks and sweets and things like that. And in doing that, I am paying the price, because you just don't realize how much sugar is in everything. You just don't realize how much everything that you go out, like you can go to a restaurant, go someplace and think, oh, I'm going to get a snack. And it's like, man, everything has sugar. Now, for myself, I found that most of what I was taking in as far as processed sugars were in my drinks. So it was like you add sugar to your tea, or you get, you know, apple juice and it has a lot of, you know, sugar and all these types of things. And what happened was I kind of had an idea of what I wanted to do, but I didn't have a really specific plan on how I was going to eat. And my mission, my goals there kind of took a little turn. I've gotten better with it, but it got me thinking, because as we spent the past better than a month talking about sacrifice, and I feel like just in talking to many of you, getting feedback, that it's been effective in really helping us to understand how important it is that we look at ourselves and understand that in modeling Christ's behavior, we have to model his sacrifice. What I want us to do is kind of turn the corner and talk about the mission of Christ, and also in looking throughout the New Testament, the mission that God has for us as his followers, as Christ's disciples. And one of the things in looking at what I was planning to do with my eliminating sugar from my diet was, missions fail when you don't have clear goals. Missions fail when you don't have a place to go eat. Missions fail when you think that you're okay with just drinking water all the time, and then you find out that your life revolved around sweet tea and coffee. And the same thing happens to us in our daily walk. We want to do the right thing. We want to please God. We want to live like Christ. I venture to guess that if I were to ask for a show of hands and I said, how many people in here want to live like Jesus? Just about every hand would go up. But we have to have clearly defined goals with our mission. And this will make sense to you in a second, but the title of the sermon today is Squad Goals. Now, I'm looking at some of the faces, and this is what I expected. Most of you are thinking, what is a squad goal? Okay, now this is a pop term that young people use. It was actually made popular in hip-hop culture. It was a guy by the name of Waka Flocka Flame who first brought this to popularity. See, she's laughing. It's okay. Waka Flocka Flame, he brought this. And now it's become really popular, and all the young kids are using this. And when you think about these new terms and things like that, keep in mind you were once young too, and your parents once looked at you and thought, what is he talking about? What is that music that she is listening to? This doesn't make sense to me. But squad goals, basically, so that we understand, is the title of the sermon, because, and we'll look at the definition here in a second, but I want us to think about, what is our goal here at the Dover Church of Christ? What is our goal in context to when we look at the scriptures? And just to give you the definition, since this obviously hasn't made it into like scholastic academic places, I had to go to the Urban Dictionary. You see, Ben's laughing. He knows about squad goals. Anyway, an inspirational term for what you'd like your group or friends to be or accomplish. Used best when placed at the end of a directional statement. A lot of times with a hashtag at the end. And so what happens is you have young people that they've identified with this term. Basically, their friends, their group, they have goals, things that they want to aspire to and accomplish. Much like we do as Christians, right? And I'm going to come back to this term, squad goals, because it's important that we also are able to identify with pop culture. I'll tell you why in a little bit. But first, let's look at some squads that we can identify with. Now, anybody's ever watched TV, you may not have thought of them as a squad, but see, Pat's lab, she watched Friends. Okay, it wasn't one of my favorite shows, but I get it. I watched it. I understand and I understood what Friends was. This is another squad, group of people. They were really close friends. And the thing about all of these, I want you to notice, is that we see these in entertainment. We see these in Hollywood. You know, Seinfeld, these people all had different personalities, but they were together. You know, this is something that's a little more popular. I grew up on this. Every Saturday, I was excited because I was ready to see The Muppet Show. Now, The Muppet Show is not something that you see regularly on TV anymore. My kids, you know, they're still Sesame Street, still, for the time being. But I know that, like, some of you can identify with these people. We have some Trekkies, I'm sure, out here who can identify with, you know, the Star Trek ventures. And always, when I was young, I always wanted to be Captain Kirk. I found out I was more like, you know, Scotty. But so then, you know, when I woke up in the morning, this was a team. You know, this was my squad, the Super Friends. You know, young people, they wanted to be a superhero, always wanted to be a superhero. This is the Bad News Bears. Everybody remembers this. This is a team. They were somewhat dysfunctional, and the coach was somewhat dysfunctional. But it was teams. These are goals. They all had the same goal. They had to work together for that mission. Some of us recognize these. This is a squad. This is a crew. Yes, the Golden Girls. They were all different, all different personalities. One of them wanted to be young, even though she was old. One of them had the issues that came with, you know, being with her mom still. One of them was a little bit flighty, and we appreciated her. Like, the idea, though, is that none of these people in all these different groups that we look at, none of them had the same personality. None of them came from the same place. None of them had the same exact thought process and how they dealt with things, but they were still together. And so as we look at that, I want to look back at that scripture that Carlos just read. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, starting in 19, it says, "Though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone, to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak to win the weak. I became all things to all people so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all of this for the sake of the gospel that I may share in its blessings." So we see this very clear-eyed mission, this very clear-eyed goal. He says, "I did all of these things that I didn't have to do, that it wasn't something I was required, but I did all of these things so that I could win some." See, when we think about our goal and our mission as a church and what it is as Christians that we are expected to do in living like Christ, it is this right here. Not only that we have holy living, not only that we ourselves are growing closer to God, but that we help others come along. But what has to come with that? What has to come with that is we who know Christ have to work together in this effort. We have to be willing to say, you know what? It may not be something that I can identify with. It may not be something that I share. It may not be something that I understand. But what Paul was saying was he immersed himself in different cultures and in different lifestyles and learning about different people so that he could win some of them. When we look back at this time, and we're going to spend the next few weeks looking in 1st and in 2nd Corinthians, because it's very applicable to what we deal with today, which is if we're going to grow, which is what we're expecting to do, which is what we want to do, we have to first understand, well, what is our mission? How do we achieve this thing? How do we go about winning? See, when you play sports, you have a very clear definition of what it means to win. It's whoever has more points on the board at the end of the game. Or when you have, if you're in a sales job or something, you know that the goal is to meet a certain sales quota or a certain expectation that you sell a certain amount of product or you bring in a certain volume, whatever it is. We have these things. But a lot of times as Christians, we sometimes can forget what winning is defined by. Winning is not just purely, well, I'm learning more and I'm filling more my head up with more knowledge and I'm understanding better how to live. Although that is important and it is necessary, it is at the foundation of what we're supposed to do. The goal and the purpose in doing that is so that we can help save others, so that we can model Christ, so that others know if I'm looking for Christ, if I'm looking to get help, I know where I can find it because this person, they're living the way God expects them to live. And so what we see here is that Paul is saying, I've become these different things. I've managed to, and he uses this term slave, but in this passage, he keeps talking about winning and winning and winning. But he talks about slave and being a slave. Now see, when we think about winning, we think about what it means to win, it means to save people. And then he also says here at the very end, I do all of this for the sake of the gospel that I may share in its blessings. Now, what does it mean to share in the blessings of the gospel? It means that as the gospel spread, you share in the joy, you share in the benefit of knowing that Christ didn't die for nothing. That he didn't just die for the sake of, but he actually died so that other people can find him, so that other people can be like him, so that other people can hear the word. So when we think about this winning and what is God's definition, and we're going to go back to this thing about being a slave, because see, a lot of times for people, we think of slave, this is the imagery that comes to our mind. We think of shackles. We think of restrictions. We think of maybe, in this country, the dark history of slavery, we think of slavery in these negative terms. But what Paul is saying is, I'm flipping this on his head. I'm making this into a positive thing. See, now, I'm really about to go out here now, because unless you understand computers and technology, this is not going to make sense to you. So I'm going to do my best to explain it. And if you don't understand, even after I explain it, Jimmy can help you, because Jimmy knows. But in a computer, you have multiple disks a lot of times. You don't always just have one hard drive that controls everything. You may have multiple hard drives on it. And you can have two identical hard drives. But the difference in one of them being what's called the master, which controls the operation of the computer, and the other one, which is a slave, is by all you have to do is change the settings. Now, technology has changed in advance a little bit. But this is how it's called an IDE hard drive. I won't go too far off in the weeds. But basically what you have is you can have two identical hard drives, but one of them defers to the other. One of them says, you know what? I'm going to defer to this other drive and let him or it be the master hard drive. And I'll be the slave. Meaning, I'm going to put that other person's interest, their culture, their identity, their thoughts, what matters to them, I'm going to allow that to be what we focus on. And I want to read another passage in Acts chapter 15. It goes along with this, going back to the slave thing. It says, starting in verse 8, God, who knows the heart, showed that he accepted them by giving the Holy Spirit to them, just as he did to us. He did not discriminate between us and them, for he purified their hearts by faith. Now then, why do you try to test God by putting on the necks of Gentiles a yoke that neither we nor our ancestors have been able to bear? No, we believe it is through the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ that we are saved, just as they are. Now, when we go in here, and I'm going to come back to that passage, but We looked at squad goals in the Urban Dictionary, but let's look at what a clique is. Clique, simple definition, a small group of people with shared interests or other features in common who spend time together and do not readily allow others to join them. What Paul is talking about in these letters to the church in Corinth is that you have to be on guard and watch yourselves, because slowly but surely you can become this clique as a church. You can even have subgroups in your church where they're cliquish, and you may not think of it as being exclusive. You may not think of it as being exclusionary and keeping people out. You may think you're being inclusive, but are you really? Because if you're going to be inclusive for the sake of winning others, then you have to consider what is going to be effective in helping others. So what do I mean by that? Oftentimes, we don't think of it from the standpoint of as a church or even as individuals. We don't think of it as, well, I'm holding people away. Like if somebody walks in these doors right now, we're not going to say you're not welcome. We're not going to not greet them. We're not going to treat them poorly. But what Paul was talking about in chapter 9 was, so what if I had to change something? What if I had to do something different? What if I myself had to learn something different? What if I had to relate to something that wasn't native to me, it wasn't common to me? Am I willing to do that so that I could save others? An example would be, and in the past we've talked about this at different times, where we're not going to tell a young couple who has young children, you're not welcome in the Dover Church of Christ. Of course we're not going to say that. We would greet them, we would want them to be welcome, we would want them to feel like they can find a home here. But do we have things in place? Are we interested in the things that would help them and their young family? Is that something that we would make sure that we immerse ourselves into so that we can understand what's best going to help them to grow and be able to cultivate a relationship with God? The same thing could be, you might say, you know what? I've said this in the past. I'm a 41-year-old black man, but am I interested and do I concern myself with the things that are going on with a person who may be in their 70s, maybe a widower or a widow, or maybe somebody who lives alone? Do I concern myself with those things? Well, it isn't native to me. It isn't something I think about. I've got an 8- and 4-year-old. I'm in my 40s. Me and my wife are still working. We're not retired. But for the sake of those who may need to hear the gospel, am I willing to spend time getting to know that lifestyle, that culture? You may say, well, you know what? What is black history to me? Or for that matter, you may say, well, what does it matter to me what's going on with young people? See, that's why I use the term squad goals, because while we had a way of doing things, I know when I was growing up, we had a way of doing things when I went to church and I was young. And it was like you did it a certain way. And basically, it was expected that me as a child or me as a teenager, that I do it the way that it was brought to me. But maybe young people right now, they can't hear it that way. They don't understand it that way. The way it's being taught isn't something that's functional to them. And so are we as a church willing to be all things to all people, willing to say, you know what, I'm going to do something different, not abandoning the message of the gospel, not compromising the message of the gospel, but saying, you know what? I see the effects and I'm humbled by the condition of the church in that there are people who are not being reached. There are people who cannot hear the message. There are people who come through here and they think, I don't know if this is a place where I can grow. I don't know if this is a place where I can be taught. I don't know if anybody can relate to me. We have to be relatable. We have to be willing to be relatable. Otherwise, we become the exclusionary group that says, unless you can come in and do it my way, unless you come in and you fit in, unless you meet a certain amount of requirements, we can't do anything for you. That is the opposite of what Paul was saying when he said he wanted to reach as many as he could so that he could save some. And we talk about that slave thing and being able to say, you know what? I know that I have things that I like and I want and my concerns, but I'm willing to change. I'm willing to learn something new. I'm willing to immerse myself into something new. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, starting verse 31, it says, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Do not cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews, Greeks, or the church of God, even as I try to please everyone in every way. For I am not seeking my own good, but the good of many, so that they may be saved. One of the things that's very powerful about looking at Paul's writings when he's writing to the church in Corinth is noting that, and this is very important, I want us to hear this, that often we can think of ourselves as, well, you know what, this is me and this is who I am and I'm limited. I don't have certain skills. We can look at Paul and say, well, he was an apostle. We can look at Barnabas and look at Peter and say, well, they were apostles. Of course, they were called to go out into the mission field and work to seek and save the lost. What Paul is saying here and in so many places is that it's not just for the apostle. It's not just for that person that we think of as being a term like a super Christian, like they're just really devoted. It's for each and every one of us. What he was talking to this church about was, how is it that you have the tools and the ability, you have the skills, you have the people, you have the personalities, but do you have the right heart that says, I'm willing to do whatever it takes? So that we can grow, so that other people can hear the message. And I know that I like how he starts out in chapter 11, where he says, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. Now, one of the things that was very interesting is a couple weeks ago, as Ted was preaching the sermon for Corrine's funeral, he talked about the goals that the borderline health group had, that the goal was a bunch of people who really didn't have a lot in common would come together so that they could get to know one another, that they could share with one another. And as time went on, they evolved to the point where their goal, their mission, their purpose was to serve Corrine. That a lot of what they did surrounded around being able to help and serve her. And when we think of our mission and our goal and our purpose, even as we're going to in the next couple of weeks here, put an emphasis and focusing on rebooting and starting our family groups, one of the interesting things is that we have to be of the mindset that says the goal and the mission and the purpose and the activities and why I do the things I do are just like what Paul says. I learn these things. I immerse myself in these things. I surround myself around certain people, not based on my comfort, not based on what I want, but so that others can be served, so that others can be heard. Now, we're family here today, and I'm going to talk as family. We have holes in our church. We have big, gaping, wide holes in our church. We know that we have a church where there isn't a lot of young people. There isn't a lot of emphasis placed on the children. And that's not to say that people don't care that nothing is being done. But what is it going to take for us to be able to reach youth? This is not something that's exclusive to the Dover Church of Christ. This isn't something that's just going on here. This is something that's going on in churches all over. And I'll talk about this next week. But One of the things in preparing for this sermon series and talking about how to reach your youth, how to reach populations that generally do not come to church anymore, what was so discouraging for me was article after article after commentary after commentary after sermon and video and seeing leading scholars and how they demonize and talk so badly about young people. They talk so badly about how they're just lost and they just don't want to change and they just want to live in sin and they don't want to come to Jesus. And it was so discouraging because it's like, why would I want to come to your church if everything is built around you? Why would I want to come to your church if you don't listen to me? Why would I want to come to your church if I don't believe that you're even going to be interested in helping me get close to God? Or if you're only going to do it your way? See, it's easy to demonize young people and say, well, you know what? They just don't want to follow Jesus. But according to Paul, he's saying, no, you're putting a yoke around their neck that didn't even help you. You're making them be like you. You want them to be a Jew, not a Christian, not a follower of Christ, not a disciple. You want them to be a Jew because you're unwilling to step back and say, you know what? What's really necessary is that I understand them so that I can reach them, so I can teach them, so I can preach to them, so that I can help them understand. But that has to be our goal. That has to be our mission here. That not just we want to help, but how do we help? How do we define winning those souls? How do we define growth? How do we define being effective as a church? Is it just being comfortable? Is it being able to come here on Sunday morning and, okay, I feel like my spirit was fed and I feel like I got something. I feel like I heard the word. Or is it, I feel like not only did I hear the word, but I can now go and be empowered to help others hear the word. And the reason why this is so important, how he starts out chapter 11 talking about following the example of Christ, is because it's important that we understand this isn't just for another person to do. This isn't just for somebody who's paid to do it, or somebody who this is their job title, or this is their title in the church, or this is something that they are expected to do. It's for all of us. It's for all of us to say, you know what? I have a part in this mission. I'm a part of this team. I have a stake in this. It matters to me that people are being taught and preached the gospel. And so I want to close here and just leave us with a couple of pointers. That the goal of our squad here at the Dover Church of Christ and the goal of all true Christians is not only to live the way that Christ lived, but to bring others to him. And so over the next several weeks, we're going to talk about that goal and our mission as a church to be able to bring others to him. How it is that we can change and be like what Paul said. I'm a slave. I'm willing to defer. I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to do what I have to do to help others. See, Paul didn't have to do it, just like we don't have to do it. But if we're going to live like Christ, we have to be willing to do things that may not be native to us. We should use our freedom to welcome rather than push people away with our personal rules and traditions. I think of how, and I've shared this before, and we're going to talk about this in the future, but one of the things that was so powerful, and I'll share just briefly about this, was we got together on Tuesday for our family group over at Linda's house. And there's a lot of people who may not come to church here on Sunday, but they might be willing to come to your house, have some coffee, and look over a scripture. There may be somebody who needs Christ, and you're the closest thing to Christ that they're going to get, and they may not come here on Sunday with you to church right now, but they would go to a basketball game with you. whether you like basketball or not. They might go with you to a play, whether you're interested in the theater or not. But we have to use our freedom to say, you know what? Part of being inclusive, part of being willing to win as many as possible is I'm going to make it so that this person feels like they're welcome, feels like they're not an outsider, feels like they're heard. I think I mentioned this in the past. Like, what if we could paint the walls a different color? I don't know, something different. And it would be more conducive and more helpful and make people feel more comfortable as they come in here. Are we willing to do that? You might say, well, that's trivial. That's just, you know, well, yeah, it's trivial because it's only a few hundred dollars. We got plenty of men here to paint. But would we be willing to do that as a church? Something as small and trivial as that? Or are we locked in on how we're going to be? We're locked in on, look, if you can't accept the colors of our walls and the color of our carpet, I know we just put down the carpet, but what if we put down new carpet? Mark's over there smiling like, nah, we ain't buying no new carpet. But the point is, what lengths are we willing to go to help others feel like they're included in this place? Are we willing to say, you know what? Maybe if we had to change the format where we did a couple more songs, or we lengthened the sermon 10 minutes, or we cut it down 5 minutes. Are we willing to do those things if it means somebody's going to get reached? We're going to start having children's church. There have been visitors over the past few years where I've been here, where they come in, they come with their kids, but they want church for the kids. They want their kids to be able to get something. Because, see, back when I was younger, I experienced them both. You had to sit right there and be quiet. Miss LaVeda made fun of me last night, as she often does. But she told me, she said, Bill, you just want your kids to come in, sit down, be quiet, and not move. And I added to that, yeah, and not breathe. Because I kind of want my kids to just be still because they're rowdy. But here's the thing. Everybody's not that way with their kids. There are some people who want to come here and hear the word, but what are they going to do with their young children? Now, when we think about this, it's important that we also understand, too, that there are many of us who've been here a long time, and we have children that are now adults. And there are ways in which, as a church, things could have been different. They could have been better. There could have been more centered around helping those children grow up so that once they became adults, they didn't lose sight of their purpose in following Christ. There are ways in which we could make small adjustments and changes just in the way that we live as individuals. But are we willing to do that for the sake of making people feel welcome, making people feel heard, making people feel like, you know what? There's a place for you. And you may not be ready to come on Sunday morning, but maybe you'll come out to Luther Towers on Monday and you can worship with us there. We have to recognize, both personally and as a church, the need to build in places that have been neglected. I use the example of a field, if you're a farmer, and how if you have, anybody's ever seen a field that's overrun, that hasn't been tended to, the weeds are all over the place, you got all kinds of stuff. They can't grow there. The ground is hard. You can't do anything there. We have those holes in this church. And our goal is to not just fill those holes for the sake of filling those holes, but we have to have enough compassion to understand that there are young people who are lost. They call them millennials now. We're going to talk about millennials going forward. And are we willing to do what it takes to reach them, that next generation? Are we willing to go and spend time with people who maybe don't have cars anymore and they can't drive and they're over there at Luther Towers? That's why we're over there on Monday. Because it's sometimes hard for people to get out. Or what about that, you know, we have people that maybe they don't speak the language very well. Maybe they struggle with their English. And so what are we going to do as a church that says, you are welcome here because Christ says so? While we may think that everything has to revolve around us, in reality, what Paul tells us is it revolves around seeking and saving the loss. And finally, we must imitate the examples of those who are living like Christ rather than rationalize them as exceptional. Now, there are some people that will look at, you know, this verse talking about imitating others, you know, imitating others as they imitate Christ. And we'll think some of us are actually like, no, you know, in our pride, maybe we're not willing to admit that there's somebody who's living more like Christ than you in a certain area. But generally speaking, if you're humble, the danger is thinking, well, you know what? No, that's actually something for them. They're more like Christ than me. So I'm just going to say, well, I'll leave that to them. But Paul says, no. We have to imitate the behavior and the attitude and the heart of those who are living like Christ. Essentially, what he's saying is we have to be willing to do what works. In my first sermon here, it's been some years, the title was, What Do You Have to Give? What's so encouraging about this place is that getting to know everybody in here, I know that everybody in here has something to give. Everybody in here has something to give. Everybody in here can reach somebody, can relate to somebody that may not be naturally in their peer group, may not naturally be somebody that they would be friends with, but everybody in here has something to give. Every single person I'm looking at has something to give. And so the question is, who's on your win list? When we think about our mission, having clear goals of winning, who's on our win list? Who are you praying about to say, you know what? I don't know what I can do to reach this person. I don't know what I can do to identify this person. I don't understand this person's culture, but I'm praying for them. But I want to spend time with them. I want to talk to them. I want to get to know them. I want to share my story with them because I know our stories are similar. As a growing church, as a church that accepts the mission of following Christ, we have to be willing to say, I'm going to give something. I'm willing to give up something. I'm willing to immerse myself and understand another person's history, another person's culture, another person's identity, because I want this person won for Christ. I want this person to know that when they're ready and they have questions, and I go back to Tuesday because a gentleman showed up to the family group and we're sitting there talking about something as obscure as fasting. And as we get to talking, he says, I have questions. I want to follow Jesus. I want to be a better Christian. I know I need to do some things, but I have questions and I want to do it right this time. I don't want to just fall by the wayside and give up on my commitment to God, but I want to know how to do this, but I have questions. One of these days, I'll tell you the full story about that. But what's amazing is that didn't happen on a Sunday. That didn't happen right after church. He didn't pull me aside or something. It was in a nice little conversation we were having about the scriptures at somebody's house. Man got called up 3 minutes before he came over. And he just happened to show up and said, I have a need. But do we first see the need for us to say, you know what? It's inconvenient on a certain day, maybe, or it may pinch me a little bit. It may take away from my time, but I'm willing to host a family group at my house. Not because it's what's best for me or not because somebody's going to give me a pat on the back, but because I want others to be saved. I'm willing to teach. I'm willing to go sit down and have coffee with somebody. I'm willing to spot one of my friends for lunch. Not for my own benefit, but so that others can be won for Christ. But who's on your win list? Do you have a win list? Do you have a list of people that you're concerned about, that you're praying about, because you want them to come to Christ? If you don't have one, get one. Develop one. Ask God to put a list together for you. Ask him to help you so that your eyes can be clear and your thoughts can be clear so that you can know, who is it that I need to be focused on trying to win right now? I ask all these things because as we go forward, I want us to consider not only growth from the standpoint of personal growth, and we've talked a lot about that, but in order for us to truly comply and be willing to and able to benefit from the blessings that Paul talked about, we have to be about winning. And we have to be about winning not only because it's what we should be doing as Christians, but so many of us have what it takes to win. We have what it takes to help others find Christ, but we have to also be willing to sacrifice and be willing to serve and give in the way that Christ would want us to. If you haven't accepted Christ, if you want to come forward because you need prayer, maybe in this area, maybe in another area, I ask you to come forward. Because as we go forward throughout the rest of this month and throughout the rest of this year, I fully believe that this church is going to grow in this mission, but it is going to take us being willing to be all things to all people. Please come forward if you will during our song of invitation at this time.